Jeff, you're welcome to partake.
You know, Jeff.
Dude, I think the internet would shit its pants if I lit one up right here.
Oh,
you'd die.
Right? Oh, man. Jeff, but listen.
Be legendary.
Let's do it. I'm going to use it for the end. I'm going to wait for the end of you to say this.
All right. You guys ready? Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hot Boxing. I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
We got a great guest today, Mike.
Big time. We're getting great guests. The better, the better. They come
We just get the best people in here, man. We've got Jeff Nowitzki, a.k.a. the Golden Snitch.
Oh, no, that's not a Golden Snitch. He's a discoverer of people that's doing devilish and wicked things. Ooh. People that are hurting people physically.
I like that interpretation, yeah. Dude. Well, Jeff, it's great to have you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys,
great
man.
To
I
have
appreciate
you,
it. Man. It's an honor. It's an honor to be here
so
with you,
Jeff,
Mike.
So, Jeff, explain your situation to the people. Who are you, Jeff?
Yeah, so my current role, I'm the Vice President of Athlete Health and Performance with the UFC. My main role with the UFC is I oversee what I believe is the world's best anti-doping program in professional sports. And I base that not off of opinion, but off of experience. Before I came to the UFC, I was a federal agent in the United States for about 23 years. And about halfway through my career, ran into an investigation called Balco Laboratories. And it turned out to be one of the highest profile performance-enhancing drug distribution cases really in the world. And so thereafter, I kind of became that point person where anybody, not only in the U.S., but really worldwide, anytime you saw somebody investigating something that came across steroids or growth hormones or things in sports, inevitably they'd call me up and just ask for advice on how I worked my case. So really the last 12, 13 years of my career, I mean, I talked to agents in the United States and Spain and France and Australia. Anytime anybody came across something, they'd usually pick up the phone to call me to get my advice on what they were seeing and potentially how to work it. So former athlete myself, I mean, I was just fascinated by it, fascinated by what these drugs can do, fascinated by the temptations that these athletes felt to do it. And there's a lot of temptations out there.
And listen, I don't even blame the athletes. You know, I can't blame them. You know what this is going to give? It's going to give you your dreams. Mm. This is going to give you your dreams. I'll put you so close to your dreams, you're going to get them. You're going to touch them. It's just, it's hard to even say no, because this is what, and this is the truth. If an athlete, very few athletes that could say, I just want to see if I'm better than him. It's clean. I just want to see if I'm better than him. Man for man, can I beat him? You know, we want to believe that, but I can make sure I'm better if I take this, though. I guarantee me to be better. You know, it's tough for us because some of us don't like to touch who we really are. We're really, really winners or losers. Sometimes we doubt who we are, even though we are that great energy. We doubt it sometimes. So it could be it's easier to say this. Take this. This would be easier.
Yeah.
And make me better.
Yeah.
But then you find people that you say, I won't take it. I think I'm the best in the world. No one could beat me. I'm going to fight them without it.
So, Jeff, you really focused, much of your career has been focused on performance-enhancing drugs.
Correct. I absolutely 100% agree with Mike, and a lot of people were surprised with that. You know, people ask me like, oh, all these athletes must think that you know, you hate them, they're wrong. I'm exactly in Mike's camp. I completely got why they made that decision. And, you know, if I'm in my early 20s and I'm a professional baseball player in the late 90s and I see what's going on in baseball and I'm coming up from the minor leagues into that major league clubhouse for the first time.
You come from shit.
Exactly.
You come from shit. Your family don't have no money. You're on a farm. You're just fucking, from shit. You're from shit.
And it's my dream to play in the major leagues. And I realized very quickly that unless I get on this program, my time here is limited. And the reward for having a great season, millions of dollars. You come from, you know, that type of background. It completely changes your life, your family's life. Man, who is not going to make that? You know, it would be the rare person that would not choose to go.
And there's abundance of money and everything out here. And there's enough money for everybody to have over and over again. And still we don't have it. And you think I won't take that chance?
Yeah, man.
Oh,
I remember playing in the NFL, you know, making it to the league. And then, you know, performance-enhancing drugs in the NFL are I didn't see many guys taking them. I think the policy in the league is strict enough at least to catch the common ones there might be some guys doing HGH or some undetectable stuff. Maybe you can talk a little bit, speak to that about, you know, what is detectable and what isn't. But, you know, for me, it was like some of these guys I looked up to my whole life as a young player, doing everything clean, coming into the league. You know, now guys are, I'm being taken by a veteran into the training room to get a shot of Toradol before the game.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way it's done. Yeah. Come on, come get this shot. You'll feel like $1 million.
100%.
You'll feel like you can run through a wall.
What, you know, one thing I notice, it's very evident with the NFL, is that, you know, and I see this and I've talked to athletes, there's constantly a risk-reward calculation going on in their heads. The rewards are obvious. There's no doubt about it. Anybody who says, like, steroids, growth hormone doesn't really work, is full of shit. They don't know what they're talking about. It works as good as you can imagine it working. So, you know, play that off what the penalty is in the NFL. For a first time now in the NFL, it's a 4-game suspension. So you're missing a quarter of the
year. Listen,
that's nothing.
I lose this is something I use because a lot of times I always hurt. I got old and I start getting aches and my back start hurting. I hurt my hands. I fracture my hands, sprain my hands. But I say it hurts me. I can't train. That's the only purpose. I'm fighting with a broken hand, but I have to get in shape. So I do this thing called fentanyl.
Oh.
Whoa, I can box with a broken hand. I can box you with a sprained leg. I can fight. I can train. I can get in shape, fucked up with broken bones.
Yeah.
You know, but when it wears off, I'm going to throw up. It's like it's like heroin. I'm going to get sick. You know, I hate the fact of throwing up, but I can get through the sparring session. I can get through this workout for fucking, 60 days, whatever it is.
Yeah.
6 weeks, I can get through this fucking workout. Yeah. With the fentanyl, I can get through. I won't feel shit. I feel like a god. I'm moving around. It's just incredible. But it's going to kill me.
Yeah, exactly.
Ain't that some shit? I feel like God, but this thing is going to kill me.
Yeah.
They put a hole in my foot. I used to always pad it under my foot and put my sock on it. And eventually, it irritated a little hole through my foot.
Fuck. The patch?
Yeah.
It's terrible,
I never took
man.
It off. That's why I hid it. I didn't want no one to see it.
Yeah. So the first suspension, 4 games. What is it after that? I mean, I should know, but I
maybe doubled, maybe 8, or maybe a season.
But eventually, they're gonna make a chemical that's gonna camouflage it.
So talk about that.
So, Mike, you're right. I mean, there are these chemists out there, and Balco
had one of them. They're
incredible.
They're in the backyard somewhere.
Right? They are. They make stuff in their garage,
whatever.
Yeah, these
guys are in the backyard doing incredible, genius shit.
Unless you know in anti-doping what you're looking for, you can't find it. For whatever drug is out there, there has to be a specific test that recognizes that drug. Mm-hmm. So what these chemists are doing is taking a steroid, a known steroid, and adding an extra atom, molecule, whatever on it, and it still retains the benefits of the steroid, but it won't show up on a traditional test unless the science finds out about it and creates a test for it. So it's a constant cat and mouse game. Constant.
Interesting.
I was telling a couple of years ago, I was telling a friend, like, hey man, something's wrong with my dick. My dick is not getting hard. He said, he said, come over, Mike. I got something for you. So I'm going to shoot you in the head of your dick. It's never going to go down, Mike. Oh, shit. I wanted to do it so bad. I was so scared. He said, no, Mike, I'm going to go right on the top of your dick, Mike. It's going to last. It's going to last forever, Mike. It'll never go down. I said, fuck. I just wanted some
Did
Viagra.
Did you do it?
No, I just wanted some Viagra or something. Or some Cialis. He's fucked up. Stick this needle in my dick.
That.
Oh, shit. He said, Mike, don't please, Mike, trust me. I said, fuck, in my tip of my dick, I'm going to stick this needle, long needle, fuck no.
That's another kind of performance.
I didn't even want him holding my dick. I got to have him hold my dick and stop. Fuck no, fuck, I couldn't do that. Oh, fuck.
Oh, that's scared. Terrible, dude.
Well, we were talking earlier before we came in here about the Wizinator.
Oh,
so yes.
Now, and really, I mean, I say this all the time, how much respect I have for our athletes, because not only are they having to take a pee in front of somebody, but somebody who's up close and personal on their knees watching that pee come right out of them. And that's because of this device that, you know, in the past, it was a Wizinator, which was a prosthetic.
Yeah, it was awesome, man.
With, you put clean urine.
Yeah, I put my baby's urine in it.
Oh, my God.
And sometimes I'm just hoping that one day I use my wife. My wife said, baby, you better not hope that it comes back pregnant or something. something.
Yeah.
And I said, Nasa, we ain't going to use you no more. We're going to use the kid. Because I got scared that the piss might come back pregnant.
Mike, you're pregnant.
Yeah.
I think that's happened before in the world of anti. I think a male provided a urine sample and they came back and said, sir, you're pregnant.
Yeah, listen,
you're pregnant, that's, or this
that's
is
what I was afraid
urine.
Of. I guess I did hear that happen since I was afraid of that.
Yes.
Well, did you have the right color, Wizinator? Because it was that NFL
guy, that had a white one.
I had this brown one. Who was that? I heard that story.
But this guy was so fucking macho. He was scared. I whapped it out. He was like, turn around, hey, man, take the fucking cup. You know, this macho guy. He don't look at me and shit.
Yeah, you got to play those dudes, man. Yeah, it's the worst job in the world.
Oh, it is, man. Our testers, not only are they closely observing, you know, our athletes in a very intimate way, they're waking our athletes up 5, 6 in the morning because, as we talked about earlier, in a good, solid anti-doping program, you could never know when the tester's coming.
Yeah.
Could be early at night. Could be late or early in the morning.
That
could
comes from the prison system. Yeah. They learned that from the prison system because that's what they do in the prison. They never let you know. They come when you're sleeping. Drug test you. Piss right here.
Really?
Yeah, right here. Wake up. Get a piss right here.
Wow.
Could you imagine having to be that guy or girl? I mean, we have some of the toughest individuals on the planet Earth in some of the baddest areas on the planet Earth they live in.
Showing up. Knocking on
somebody's door in a bad neighborhood at 5. Yeah. Nothing. There's not ever any good news when someone's knocking on your door at 5 or 6 in the morning.
No, it's not
never.
A good thing.
And some of them probably knock on the door from on the side and knock
no
on the
doubt.
Door.
In training camp, they'd come pound on your door at about 4:30 in the morning.
Check out that we had an instance 2 weeks ago. So one of our fighters knock on the door. I think it's 5:36 a.m. Opens it up, and this woman says, hey, I'm here to take your blood. So this guy's like, okay, this is probably a UFC test. Come on in. So he starts giving the blood and starts noticing, man, this isn't usually how this happens.
Oh,
and she's taking a shitload of blood out of me. So he goes, this is more than you normally take, isn't it? And she goes, oh, John, don't worry. And he goes, John. He goes, my name's Dan.
Oh, no, get the fuck
out of the wrong house.
Fuck, I wouldn't believe it if you went.
Oh, she had the wrong house, I swear to God. It was the same number, but the next street over. What are the fucking odds that someone at 6 in the morning is there to collect blood and the person's used to it?
Yeah.
I mean, just that would never happen in a million years.
That's a nightmare, dude. Talk about, like, first of all, I'm curious what the UFC's policy is because you said that you watched Henry's episode, Cejudo.
I did. Yep.
You know, we love Cody Garbrandt here. He's a good
friend.
Yeah,
what happens to Cody after all that stuff? Now, this guy beats me. He's using shit.
Yeah.
He beats me. Now we find out he's dirty. What happens to me? How do I get that title? How do I get a fight with him that he's clean? How do he get that belt removed? How do I get my title back because I wasn't beat fairly?
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, TJ's belt was removed. He, you know, gave it up even
before.
Yeah,
but what happens for me?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question for Cody. That's a question for Dana. But, I mean, I would assume based on what happened that he's right back in the picture again.
Yeah,
you know?
Did he become number one contender?
Yeah, again, that's in Dana's world, not necessarily mine, but that would be my guess, absolutely, right?
Yeah. So talk about EPO.
Yep.
That is similar to blood. That is blood doping? That's like oxygenating
it's a form of
the
what's
blood?
That for? You won't catch cramps and shit?
No, so you want more red blood cells in your body because that carries more oxygen to your muscles and allows you to work harder and longer and allows you to recover quicker.
Is that dangerous to you? Does it hurt you?
The danger with blood doping and EPO is the more red blood cells you have, the thicker your blood becomes. And if you have any type of blockage in your body, you know, in a vein or whatever, those red blood cells can block it up quick. I'll give you a great example of this. So in professional cycling, EPO kind of came on the scene in the late 80s. And what these cyclists were realizing was, holy shit, like I'll prick myself with a needle and the blood barely even comes out because it's so thick. So they would set alarms for 3 in the morning, have a tall glass of water next to the red, wake up, chug the water and get on the floor and do, you know, 30 or 40 push-ups in order to keep their blood circulating for fear of my blood's becoming so thick it's going to clog up.
Wow.
I mean, so super, super dangerous if you're not doing it right and get that red blood cell count up too high.
That sounds terrible.
There were some cyclists in the late 80s that were dying. I mean, some of the best in shape athletes on the planet dying in their late 20s and early 30s of strokes and heart attacks.
Now, listen, Listen, know what's so ironic when you say something like that, when you're just an average, you know, when if you're an average person, like a young athlete or something, a young person, then you're, you're not even thinking about the afterlife. You're not that conscious yet. Mm-hmm. And just think about it. Would I give up, say I'm 20, I'm going to die at 50. 50's fucking old anything. I got 30 fucking years to do it. So would I rather die at 30 and live the life of a god? Yeah.
Yep. There's a famous poll they take every 4 years at the Olympics, and they ask Olympic athletes.
Where I came from? Glory, yeah, I want glory. I don't even want the money. Just give me some glory. Mm. Other than just being fucking abnormal, just a normal motherfucker in the hood. Just give me glory. You don't even have to give me money. Just give me somebody know my name and pat me on my back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they polled the Olympic athletes every 4 years saying if there was a pill that allowed you to make – win a gold medal, but would take 10 to 20 years off your life, would you choose to do that? Oh, and every year, majority 80, 90%, like, hell yeah.
Wow. We don't even have kids yet. Yeah. We don't even know the concept of loving our kids more than we love ourselves yet.
Yeah.
When we get that concept, our concept of life change, we want our life. We want to spend time with this child.
Did you ever take any performance enhancers, Mike?
I take fucking, I did marijuana.
Yeah. Well, talk about that, Jeff, because you're actually an advocate for CBD, and you guys, I think, have one of the most forward-thinking policies on it, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so just – it was like last year, the year before, CBD became allowed to take at all times. So there's – our fighters can take it, you know, without restriction.
That's
anytime.
Great.
Marijuana or THC only tested for in the in-competition period, which would be weigh-in day or fight day. And there's a threshold.
I did use fucking enhancing drugs. Every time I used it, I got my ass kicked.
Really?
Yeah, I got fucked up. I think somebody gave me the wrong drugs or something. He faked me out there with enhancing. It wasn't.
The anti-steroids.
Yeah, they fucked me up. I think they lied. A lot of people used to lie, fucking steal and shit.
Well, on that note, I think they do make your body weaker, you know, in the long term. You know, with ligaments and joints, you know, they put more stress on it because the muscles grow so fast that they're out of proportion with the structural system around it.
Absolutely.
Yes, so I would think the bone would break easier because it kind of maintain that fucking muscle weight that's abnormal at this particular stage of my life. I'm not supposed to be carrying this much muscle.
Yep. Yeah. You see that all the time, and it makes me question somebody with a terrible hamstring, you know, tear that's torn right off the tendon. You wonder.
The muscles continue
to grow and the tendons don't.
Yeah. Me and the Hotbox and crew are very excited for this new year because we've got some awesome things popping off. We have new Hotbox and t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and more coming to the Hotbox and shop. Go to hotboxandpodcast.com and sign up for the all-new Hotbox and Hot Sheet, where we will send you discount codes the second our new merch is in stock. Sign up for the Hotbox and Hot Sheet at hotboxandpodcast.com and make 2020 your little bitch. You said something earlier that I thought was interesting on the THC side of things, which is there is a threshold.
It's 150 nanograms per milliliter. Now, that may not mean much to the non-scientists, but, you know, it's probably – what we recommend to our fighters is if you stop using it, you know, the problem is everybody metabolizes differently. So it's I'd hate to tell, you know, Mike's one of our fighters, says, hey, Jeff, when should I stop, you know, using? And I tell him a week. He just happens to metabolize differently and he pops. Then it's on me. So I'm always out of an abundance of caution giving them a little longer window. But the reality is, you know, a week or two likely would, you know, put you under that limit. I'd love to see something, you know, along the lines of like alcohol. I mean, you could never – you're not allowed to be drunk to go in and box or fight MMA, but you're not tested for alcohol.
Listen,
you've got inspectors in the locker room.
There have been fighters that didn't. They've been on, they can't fight without drinking. They got to be drunk to fight. They can't – they don't got the nerve. They don't have the nerve. They got to be drunk. Yeah. World champion. They got to be drunk. Can't do this shit, nigga, without no motherfucking alcohol. I'm my right hand to God.
Yeah. I've seen guys take shots of alcohol.
Frankie Randall, world champion, beat Chavez. First guy to beat Chavez. Chavez had a record like 89 and the first guy to be an alcoholic.
Wow.
So while we have a threshold, and this is an interesting story. I found this out yesterday and a connection here to Mike. So while we have this threshold, so you can have some in your system, it just can't be over an amount. Some states where we go, the athletic commissions have rules where you can have none. And you know whose state still has a no-tolerance rule?
No.
Where did you test positive for marijuana?
Detroit.
State? Michigan.
Really?
We still go to Michigan, and they don't allow 1 ounce or iota of THC for marijuana, which is fucking ridiculous. You could smoke a joint a month before the fight and still have some in your system.
They do that because they want to collect the money. It's all financial.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a little of that. It may just them trying to, you know, impose their moral issues on.
They're not ignorant people.
It's just, there's no place in, you know, an anti-doping program. In an anti-doping program, you're trying to create a fair and level playing field. What difference does it make if somebody, you know, smokes something a month out? What difference, in my opinion, does it make if someone's nervous and can't sleep the night before a competition?
Yeah, that would
happen
to me.
And uses some marijuana to just relax himself and sleep.
I couldn't get, the guy got me nervous. He's really big and shit, and he got me nervous.
That's not giving you an advantage the next night when you're going to fight. It's just
it should be debilitating, if anything. Yeah, you know.
So fighters are they tested the day of the fight?
So they can be tested the day of the fight, the night of the fight, the day, but they can be tested any time. It's okay.
But you said something interesting earlier as well about how THC, the concern is that maybe having THC in your system during the fight could help you endure more damage.
That's at least the theory. I mean, I don't know whether there's weight to that because, I mean, I'm not a fighter, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
Listen, I know this, right? This is what I know. I know if three of us all had altercations with one another and we put some liquor in this room, we'd kill each other. You know, and I know if we all had altercation and we started smoking some weed, we all start taking selfies with one another and shit, right? I said, man, fuck that shit. I love you, man. That shit was bullshit. You know, I used to know that because I've been in that situation. I saw what the effects of both of them do. And that's all I know from that perspective.
But how would it relate to you competing, to fighting another human being? How do you
Mike has an interesting story about it.
Like, what do you think if I'm smoking weed?
Yeah. Do you think it would help you? Do you think it would help with anxiety? Yeah. Like,
100%. Listen, that's why I smoked it. I was a little too paranoid the night before. So I smoked the night before just to get some rest and cool out.
Yeah.
And I believed it helped me. Yeah. I was relaxing the fight. I broke the guy's eye socket, his cheekbone, his back, his rib, because he turned around while I was throwing punches. And I was calm, relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, and it was I know, it's really soothing.
Yeah. Really, I mean, that's the same story I get from our fighters, absolutely. But I just it's interesting because I've had talks with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Bob Bennett, who's their executive director. He's just like me, former federal agent. And, you know, I think they've had some preliminary discussions about, hey, why don't we just get rid of marijuana to be tested altogether? I mean, it's legal in Nevada, so there's
because you notice this is when it's really bad. Listen, this is when it gets bad. Listen, When it comes to drug tests, you know what I mean? We could all beat cocaine drug testing. You have to stay away from it for 3 days or so. We could beat that, right? But for weed, we got 45 days.
Yeah.
We got to wait 45 days in our system. And I think it stays in our system because it belongs there. Weed comes out, I mean, cocaine comes out because it doesn't belong there. Our body's trying to get rid of it. You know?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Interesting theory, dude.
Yeah. No, that's real stuff. We try to get rid of
that. Well, we produce them. To do different things in our bodies anyway, endogenous cannabinoids that help us with our appetite and our sleep rhythms and our mood.
This
and
makes
pain.
Us hungry. This we do some cocaine, nigga. We shut down. Boom. All of our senses shut down. Yeah. We don't hear nothing. We don't see nothing. It's all delusions and shit. We don't hear shit, see shit, and we're on some fucking energy we don't even know about.
Yeah.
I don't care about nobody.
In terms of things that aren't supposed to be in your body, I think this is real hypocritical in the world of anti-doping, is Xanax, Ambien, some of the opioids, we talked about this earlier, are allowed, but you can't use a little marijuana the night before a fight to sleep. I mean, that's flat out wrong.
Yeah.
I think.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think...
What's the concept? Why do we think that way? Why is it the greatest thinkers in that particular field? Why do they think that way?
Well, you were at the FDA.
I was just going to bring that up. Coming from the federal government, as it comes to those things, I think the answer is Big Pharma. I think the interest that Big Pharma has in these synthetic drugs and how much money that they make for these Big Pharma companies, the influence that Big Pharma has over lawmakers, they see marijuana as, you know, potential roadblock to their earnings potential, right? Mm. Well, listen, I think.
Yeah.
I've done almost every drug I can think of, you know. Instead of probably, did I do crack? I smoked crack before. It just didn't affect me. I did smoke meth before. It just didn't fuck. It wasn't my thing. It just didn't affect me, right? I didn't like it. It wasn't my stuff, right? I did the toad, right? And changed my whole perspective on life and drugs and all that shit. You know, it just changed everything I ever thought about drugs. It made me say drugs ain't shit if it's not like this. If you can't make me feel like this, then I can't use you anymore. So what do you do with a drug like that? What do you do with a drug like the toad? Why is the toad, like, illegal? Mm. That's the closest thing to make you have an engagement with God.
Do you know
in my perspective.
Do you know about 5-MeO-DMT or DMT? Or,
yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. I guess DMT is a Schedule One.
It is a Schedule One. But speaking of Schedule One, how the hell is marijuana?
Yes.
In the same category as crack cocaine.
Crack cocaine.
Methamphetamine.
Heroin. How did it even?
Are you kidding me?
How did that even work out?
Look, I'm not sitting here a proponent of everybody go out and use marijuana or drugs.
Yeah.
But when looking at people with medical conditions, physical conditions, psychological conditions, and given a choice between a purely synthetic drug that's, you know, processed by the liver through the kidneys versus a natural plant where there's no evidence of that type of toxicity, I just don't get it. It's so, you know,
it's
backward.
Nixon, right?
What's that?
It's Nixon.
Nixon, yeah, created the DEA in 1973. And look, I was in the front lines of the war on drugs in America. It's not working.
Yeah.
Listen, we're 45 years into it.
This is what it is. It's no end to it. It's no end to drugs and cocaine and acid and all that shit and meth. There's no end to that. That's never going to end.
Never.
It's going to be here when our great-great-great-great-grandkids die. It's never going anywhere.
Yeah.
I agree.
We make it. The toad is natural. All this shit is natural. We make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's good, intelligent people that I've worked with that are working it, so it's not for lack of effort, but the demand is too high. And you took a quarter of that money and put it into education, rehab for those that needed it and developed the problem, and I think you have a much better society than what you do now. I talk about prison overpopulation with nonviolent drug offenders. I mean, marijuana being a Schedule One drug, there's instances where if you sell enough of it, you could be facing a mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I think society is realizing that that's ridiculous, and that's why we're getting easier on the marijuana laws.
I think we're getting there. I agree with you.
You know, I believe it's just an overwhelming call for a change, and I think it's just going to be – it's a no-brainer and they have to give in. It's almost like when the Christians became legalized religion. It was so much they just couldn't stop it. What's his name? Constantine? He had to turn Christian. It was overcoming him. It was crushing him and his children and his children's children. They couldn't stop it, so we had to make that a religion of the country.
That was in Rome?
No, Constantinople. What is that?
Oh, Constantinople.
What is that? Turkey.
Turkey.
Originally. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike's a history guy too, man.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And when you think about marijuana in a form, it's like religion. It's a form of religion. Yeah. Marijuana.
Absolutely.
You know.
There are people who actually have a religion about.
What are their names? They're not the Rastafarians, are they?
Well, the Rastafarians, I think cannabis is a big part of their culture, but it's not like
the
centerpiece.
It's not the essence.
These people, actually, it's like a centerpiece of their culture. I told you about that tribe in Africa, the Dogon tribe, who have a yearly cannabis celebration. And they believe that this ancient alien race from the Sirius stars came down and brought cannabis to it. Sirius are the dog stars. There's two of them, A and B. Cannabis means two dogs. So they have all these cave paintings about people from the heavens coming down to the earth and giving them this plant because it will bring them peace. And so, I mean, there are people that are fucking
into it.
Yeah. Well, it is that, though. You know, I think that there's an intelligence to all this plant life, you know, and somehow in our Western culture, we've convinced ourselves that we know better and that we can create something better in a lab. That's safer, or at least that's become profitable. So that's the direction it's gone, you know?
I mean, I always try to look at it, it's just because of my world, from a sport perspective. And the reality is, you know, MMA, the UFC, is probably one of the most physically grueling, damaging to your body over, you know, short and long-term sports out there. And, you know, again, I'm not a proponent of everybody going out and using things, but when you have certain conditions, you're in pain all the time, and you look at the alternatives that are out there, synthetic, man-made, toxic to the liver, kidney, versus a plant that, you know, I think it's unquestioned that, you know, probably it doesn't have a lot of the addictive properties that an opioid would, certainly, and that there's no evidence that I've ever found of toxicity. Man, it sure seems to me like
are there more reasonable people like you, Jeff, and the FDA and the DEA?
They have to do, but their hands are tied.
I struggle with that a lot. I mean, you're tasked to enforce the laws of this country, many of which you may not agree with. And, you know, that's it was tough, definitely.
I guess you have to be the kind of person to take that job, right?
True. I mean, there's, like in every walk of life, there's all kinds of law enforcement agents, officers. The majority, in my opinion, with working them are really good people. There's some that, that aren't.
In it for the right reasons, maybe?
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just finding themselves. It's hard for me to believe, you know, since my consciousness is taught, it's hard for me to believe in really in bad people now. I know that's even fucked up to think, but it's hard for me to think of people bad. They're misguided. They have wrong perceptions of what they think life is and what their happiness is.
Well, I would just challenge you on that with, you know, there's dark and light in the world now.
Oh, no doubt about it.
So maybe there are people who are gravitated towards darkness and evil. And I don't know. Maybe that's just part of the balance of the universe.
Well, nobody ever showed them the essence of the light.
Yeah.
Once you find the essence of the light, you can't run back.
Yeah. It's true. Jeff, it's got to be going down in the government, man. We got to have some light in there. Can't be all dark.
I mean, I think it comes from the top. I mean, I've been obviously very interested in this election in a couple of years. You start seeing some of these candidates, and I think Kamala Harris, like, very active. One of her big, you know, agendas is federal legalization of marijuana. You know, I thought there was a lot of momentum coming, you know, in previous administrations, and it kind of slowed down with this one here. But
well, Trump is kind of like, it seems like he could be the guy to do it because he's crazy enough and he could see the business in it and the opportunity there. I was hoping that maybe that would be his golden star of achievement in his career as president, but
I don't think it appeals to his base, right?
And that's
obviously
I know
how he's governing now.
I know.
Well, some people need to talk him and express to him that he's not even acting from the opinion of his base yet. It gives them an opportunity to say yes or no. He hasn't given them that opportunity.
You know, we can get to call him is Dana. Dana still talks to him pretty regularly.
We should have Dana call him. Let's talk to him.
Give him a talk about cannabis, a little presentation. Oh, well, it's been awesome having you on, man.
Big time.
Yeah, it's been great being here. Mike, I mean, I have so much respect for you. Just, you know, growing up in high school in the mid-late 80s and in college, your fights were events. They were neighborhood get-togethers.
Really?
Celebrations.
Hey, I never
the Tyson
looked at
fight.
The guy.
Come on
that's
over.
Some bullshit.
Like, everybody tells you that, dude.
Yeah,
you created so
I never
much.
I think about it like that. So in my own world, it's here in this moment in a square ring and nobody else fucking exists.
Yeah. Well, that's how you had to be, man.
I'll tell you another quick story, which you did for me. So, you know, your kids are always the last one to think you have any type of cool factor, right? And they keep you humbled. And mine certainly are like that. My middle one, Kira, who you met a couple weeks ago in Vegas. So we were driving into the office that day, and Dana's assistant calls me on the phone. So I put it on the speaker in the car, and she says, her name's Dre. She goes, hey, Jeff, are you in the office? I said, no, I'm 5 minutes out. She said, oh, Mike Tyson and some business partners are meeting with Dana, and they want you to come in. I'm like, I'll be there in 5 minutes. I look over at my daughter, and her mouth is like on the floor, and she doesn't get excited about anything. She's like, Mike Tyson?
That's awesome.
I'm like, yeah. I go, come with me. I go, Dana is a real family guy. He won't mind. Just come in. And so she came in there and got to meet you. And for a second, at least, I was cool in the eyes of one of my kids. And that
That's
doesn't
awesome.
Happen very
God
regularly.
Is good,
man. So
man.
Thanks.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
That's so awesome. Jeff, have you ever been in contact with the NFL drug policy peeps?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, back in the Balco days, there was some NFL players there. So, yeah, I know Adolfo Birch is the guy that kind of runs their program and good guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have their own way of doing things and their own agenda. And, you know, we'll go to conferences and things like that together. But I don't know how much influence or I know I don't have any influence over
what
the NFL,
doing.
What they do.
Do you guys share data on how many percentages of athletes getting busted? And
yeah. So I think a real important thing of any anti-doping program is transparency. And I think we have the most transparent program out there. So unlike MLB or the NFL, it's like, hey, this guy got suspended for 4 games and not saying why.
Right.
We release all of our data. So total number of tests, total number of positives, what the athlete tested positive for. I think that's important because trust is a big – if you don't have the trust of your athletes in a program, then I don't care how strong your program is, it falls apart because they may think in the NFL, you get a player saying, well, if Tom Brady tests positive, is he really going to be treated the same as, you know, the 45th man on the roster who's a special teams player? And there's no way of the NFL approving that because you can't see any of these numbers or what's going on in their program. So everything we do is absolutely wide out in the open.
Great, man. Yeah, there's no trust between the league and the players in the NFL. That's what I've heard.
Players I've talked to have told me the same. Yeah.
No, why can't it can never be trust? Because there's always someone that's being deceitful on one either one side, either the player or either the corporate.
The owner.
Somebody's always being deceitful.
Yeah.
Before I forget, Mark Ratner said to say hello to you.
And that's my man, Mark Ratner. Listen, Mark Ratner, he ran the Vegas Athletic Commission for 100,000 years, right?
Oh, wow.
And he's just always been my friend. Always, he's just very special. You know, he's very special. You know, you won't know he's in the room. He's nothing flamboyant. He's just a good man.
But he did tell me a story. He fined you a little bit of money over something, right? He was always he's like, I didn't know how Mike was gonna react the next time I saw him after that.
But. Love those guys, man.
What did he have to fine you for?
Because I think I bit this motherfucker's ear.
Oh,
I'm so sorry. But listen, people thought I took it personal with them. I didn't take it personal. They just took it so fucking long. Why don't you penalize me and let me go home? They took months and weeks to get this shit done. I thought, oh, God, take the money, let me go.
Government bureaucracy right there.
Yeah, they had me killing me in the witness seat. It's killing me. Killing me. You know what, Jeff? Can I tell you what else, too? From being an athlete, know what's the biggest cause for these enhancement drugs and stuff? Our pain. We're in a lot of pain and we're lonely a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of athletes are real lonely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Real lonely.
Well, that's what we talked about when we talked about, you know, addiction too, man. Just because you're in pain, you feel isolated, you know. It has nothing really to do with the drugs that you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
These addictive substances become addictive because of our own psychology around what the hole we have to fill in ourselves.
And we don't even know we have a hole.
Yeah.
We brought to the attention that we have a hole. We have a what?
I don't have a hole, motherfucker.
Fucking hole you talking about?
All right, y'all.
But one more before I go. Let's let everybody know. Think sometime, who are you? Be in touch with who you are, because trust me, if you don't at this stage get in touch with who you are and get to know this person, who this is, I think it's a wasted life.
Who are you?
Where have you come from? Why are you here? What is your purpose? Really, who am I? I'm just somebody, my mother and father. My father and mother was just horny one night and boom, and I came up. It wasn't that they loved each other. It wasn't love. They wanted to fuck, and I came out. And what the hell happened? What was that purpose for? Really, what was the purpose?
Yeah.
What was my purpose here? What
you came in, you came through that portal.
I had no idea. It's that
portal. Look at that number. That's from another dimension, dude. Prison. 8 zeros.
Prison one.
Yeah. Oh, really? Are we going to a prison?
I hope so. We can talk to some people and help some people.
That'd be cool. Well, you heard it from Mike, y'all. Who are you? Ask yourself. Go deep. Question
my
things.
Purpose here?
What's my purpose?
I always wondered this. Who's the first me? Who's the first man in my family? Who is the first man? Where was he at? What year was he born? Before Christ? After? Yes, who was the first me? Who's my first nose come from? Where did I come from? The first person. That was me, my lineage, my bloodline, the first one. How long was he?
Probably goes back pretty far.
200 million years? How long ago was he?
Have you traced back? How far have you been able to trace back family?
Not far enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that too. That fascinates
still in the 20th, it's still in the 20th century, I think. 19th century, something like that. It's not even going over 300 years, 200 years. Not even that far.
I've gotten back to 1620s.
Wow.
Yeah.
My first ancestor that came to America, her name was Mary Bliss Parsons. She came from England. And she came here in about 1624. She was on trial for witchcraft three times, got off.
How'd you find that out?
My grandmother actually, late last year, started passing me all this family lineage stuff because I think she's like, she wants to pass it on, and I'm the guy in the family that is sort of the center, the energy center of my family. So I'm the guy who's getting this information. It's really cool. You know,
it's fascinating.
You know, I've always wanted the first male of my lineage, the first male of this lineage, whoever named, he probably wasn't even a black guy.
Mm.
He probably was white. He could have been an Asian. Who was he? The first one. You know what I mean? That turned me into this. Originally, after all those millions of years, hundreds of millions of years, I came out like this.
Might have been an alien, bro.
You never know. Who was that first person?
Yeah. That first being.
Only 1889, we started filming, documenting. Can you imagine that? 1890, we started physically documenting, besides before, you know, after writing.
Isn't it interesting about man's need or gravitation to create, like cave paintings, telling stories before we learned or started the capability of writing? I think like cuneiform or something in like ancient Mesopotamia or what was that other civilization, Mike, in Turkey?
On Turkey.
Well, yeah, Atlantis.
It's a civilization that's under Turkey that's like 9,000 years old, that's older than Africa, another country under Turkey. Africa's not the oldest country in the world. Wow. There's countries under Africa and under other countries that's been here millenniums. We can't even explain who these people were.
Yeah.
We don't even understand the messages that they left us because we think we're so superior to them. We can't even figure out the message that they left us.
Yeah.
Stonehenge and all that stuff.
Stonehenge? We haven't even figured that out. Are those heads on Easter Island?
No, nobody knows anything. We don't know who we are. How are we going to figure out something else? We don't even know who we are.
Jeff, you have any thoughts on this?
I was on the Great Wall of China.
I was
last
as well.
November. Oh, dude, that was up.
Listen,
it was
took
just,
2 years to make.
Just felt
2,000 years.
In
I'm sorry, 2,000 years to make.
It's incredible.
2,000 years to finish it.
Without a doubt, the most incredible man-made thing I've ever witnessed, been a part of in my life. It was, I took that, I left and got on a plane and flew back to Vegas. That night I walked into my house and said, was I just walking on the Great Wall of China this morning? Is this a dream? It was just really moving. Nothing's moved me like that.
I did the same thing. I did 5 miles on the Great Wall.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I want to do that.
I got home, called my mom and dad, and they said, hey, do you remember the story that your grandmother and grandfather told you about that? I'm like, no, what was it? And they said, in the early 70s, they were retired and they would go on trips. They were one of the first American tour groups to go into Russia when it opened up. So they go over to China. They go on the Great Wall of China. Who's on the Great Wall with them when they're up there? Ali.
Oh.
I'm like, did they take a picture? And my mom's like, no, it was before like everybody's walking around with cameras. And I'm like, damn, that is a story right there.
That's an amazing story.
When I went to Egypt, I saw the pyramids. I said, fuck.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
Alexander the Great, Napoleon, all these guys that went here, they've been here. All of the great warriors before them and stuff that, you know, this is the place you had to conquer. You know, the Romans, they had to conquer Egypt. That was the light at the time.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I want to go there really bad to Egypt and see that.
Yeah.
Rome is pretty awesome, too.
Rome?
Colosseum, yeah.
Yeah.
Rome, Greece.
I went, it was last year, in a period of 2 months, we're in Moscow, Russia, for our first show there. So I'm in Red Square and inside the walls of the Kremlin. You can actually go in it. And then a couple of months later, I'm in Tiananmen Square.
I went to see Mao.
Forbidden City.
I went to see Lenin.
Lenin's pretty cool in state, huh?
See him in state.
Wow.
We were reading about that going in there, and they've got people in the Russian army whose sole job is to take care of Lenin's body. So every, month or so, they bring him back underneath where the tomb
tape
is
them up
and work on them, put new skin on them,
tape them up.
clean them up. I mean, can you imagine that job?
Crazy. What an order to be a part of. Oh,
right?
That's crazy.
They take that serious when you walk in that tomb, too. Like, I had my hands in my pocket, and there's soldiers there going, get your hands out of your pocket. Like, you better be respectful.
You don't want anything.
When I go there, too, it's like this. I went to Inmount, same thing. So it's a big line, right? So the guards with the gun, they stop the line. They're going, and I go in the front. They put me in the front so I could see the bodies and stuff. Then they let me out and stuff. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool.
It's moving.
Then, yeah, it's keep moving. Don't stop. Just keep it moving. It's looking at Mount. They look like fake skin and everything. Everything looks fake on them. Look like rubber.
How would you feel about that, about lying in state forever? Yeah, just
this is interesting. You said that my wife and I, we went to Egypt. So we went to the museum and we saw the mummies laying in Thutmose the Third and all these guys. They got gold slippers on.
Yeah.
You know, like the thongs we wear. Like,
ornate.
They're gold. Yeah. So, right, we look at them, and then I'm saying to my wife, I said, with the ego that they had, they probably love people watching them. And then my wife said, no, they didn't want people to be. That's why they put them in the temple thing, because they didn't want people to gawk over them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So my wife was really freaky and superstitious about gawking over them and stuff. But it was a trip watching them. You know, I say to myself, this is interesting, too. You notice, like, in the Ten Commandments, you see Moses, they always have a staff.
Yeah.
Interesting. Only really the royals wore a staff. Now, why? Because they were fucking inbreeding, fucking their sisters and their mothers and their uncles and their fathers and everything, and they all had bad hips from it. So that's really why they had the walking staff, most of them.
God.
Could have used some THC to ease those pains.
No, I'm going to tell you some more stuff, too. So you look up cocaine dummy. They have a dummy. They cut his hair. They checked him out. And so they found that he had cocaine and nicotine in the system. And they said there was no cocaine there unless it was an alien plant, ancient plant a long time ago. Uh-huh. And they cut it out because they must have seen what it done to you. Or maybe cocaine gave them the effect that they have an afterlife.
Maybe.
You know? But where did the...
fucking dead, Mike.
But anyway, where does the cocaine and the nicotine come from 5,000 years ago in Egypt?
Oh, we got the drug testing guy in here.
I don't think they were doing any drug testing back in those days.
So. No way. They were trying to figure out what is it.
They were just experimenting. Well, it's interesting about the pyramids and the Sphinx. And I was listening to... these guys talk about how the geologists and the paleontologists disagree on the age of the Sphinx. The geologists say it has to be, this rock is at least 30,000 years old.
Really? They say it was 5,000.
Yes, exactly. The paleontologists say, no, it's 5,000 years old. Geologists go, no, this is 30,000 years old, this structure.
Wow.
And because of, like, the depths and the excavation that they've done, and it's just kind of mind-blowing, man. And this guy, I've told you about him before, Mike, this guy Thoth, the Egyptian god of wisdom, who is said to have come to Egypt to build the pyramids from Atlantis. He was an Atlantean priest who traveled to Egypt when Atlantis was taken over by a flood. And this is in this book, The Emerald Tablets, that he wrote. And the pyramids are above what is called the Halls of Amenti, where you go to be reincarnated into the world. So it's all, I don't know, man. I mean, we don't even know why the pyramids are there. Yeah, there's people buried in them, but I mean, they had pharaohs buried 300 miles outside the city that they would take, you know, and hide them because they didn't want people looting their tombs. You know, because like you said, Mike, everything was gold. They had these beautiful ornate statues and things because they believed that their souls needed them to travel into the next life.
It's crazy. They're still finding.
Yeah. Maybe. Please continue.
No, you go. Sorry, Mike.
I was just saying maybe we are who we think we are.
Yeah.
When we took all that gold and stuff, maybe in their mind, my goal is following me. I'm going with my goal. Maybe they're no longer in the physical world then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they left the physical world behind and it was this spiritual world. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, all these things that we're still finding, all these clues that are on this planet to lead us, you know, to figure out where we came from, who we are. I saw something this week, the earliest footprint ever found. Mm. Somebody found this footprint of a man and determined, oh, shit.
How do they determine if it's a man or woman footprint? This width
of
size?
The shape or size of the foot, exactly. Wow. So, I mean, it's got me, like, walking around now looking on the floor, like, oh, I want to find a footprint. I find a footprint that's older than that.
That's crazy.
Listen, I'm just talking about from reasonable terms. I just know the Vikings were here before Christopher Columbus and all those guys. Because when you think about it, the Vikings came here with their swords and their mallets and all that warrior stuff. But the Indians had, you know, it was too many Indians at the time, and they had their bow and arrows and stuff. But then they came back 1,000 years later. Boom. What was 500? Probably 1,000 years later, Christopher Columbus. Yeah, now they got guns. So it's easier to take over now. Mm-hmm. It's easier. Before, you put with the swords and the mallets, no, you're not going to do it when they got 100,000 Indians with bones and arrows.
Yeah.
You know, so, and they also found the Vikings' home. They had built a home there, nomad style.
Where at?
North America, Greenland, something like that.
Yeah. Again, Jeff, awesome to have you here today.
Thank you guys very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Take us home, brother.
All right. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. We love you guys. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. You can find all our episodes there. Head to hotboxingpodcast.com for our website. Is that correct? Yes, that's correct.
Good.
Hotboxingpodcast.com. And that's about it, y'all. Until next time, I'm Eben Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
This is Jeff Nowitzki. We're out of here.
Bye.